Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
I'm Gary Bloom, and this program is called On the Sporting Couch. I'm a counsellor and psychotherapist, and that means I work one-to-one with all sorts of people who are having or have experienced problems in their day-to-day lives. It's sometimes called a talking therapy. It doesn't mean the individual is ill or sick. It just means they feel the need to discuss the things that are going on in their lives because they're going through a tough time. One in four of us will experience these strong feelings that can overwhelm us at some stage in our lives. My training allows me to work with people, but especially sportsmen and women, who are dealing with depression, performance anxiety, relationship and work issues, as well as addictive behaviours. I'm undertaking this project to help widen the understanding of mental well-being in sport and beyond. Nearly everyone listening will know of someone who's been in this position at some stage, and hopefully this programme will give a greater understanding of what goes on between therapist and the person who today is on the sporting couch. Meet Duncan Bell, a former England rugby union prop whose club career, international career and personal life have been profoundly affected by some of the issues we're going to hear about today. He played nearly 400 club games, including Sale Sharks and Bath, and wore the white shirt of England five times in a career that lasted nearly 20 years. Duncan was a player who measured his success in inches and his failure in miles. So, in the next hour, I hope you'll hear what I think is a brave admission by an elite athlete that the life they were leading as a professional sportsman wasn't all it looked like from the outside. Welcome to On the Sporting Couch with me, Gary Bloom, and ex-rugby international, Duncan Bell.
So what's it like right now being in a radio studio, being on the verge of talking about some very difficult things?
Well, I'd say it's probably about 16, 17 degrees in here and I'm sweating. really uncomfortable talking about it, which is going to sound strange because once I start going with something, I can't stop. I've got verbal diarrhea about it. But, you know, the whole way in today, just on the train, thinking about what I was going to say, or not preparing anything, but just thinking about the whole situation, and get very uncomfortable, very nervous about it. And and even though I'm passionate about trying to help people with mental health problems, I find it increasingly difficult to talk about it.
Well, one of the things I'm going to say before we really get underway is I don't want you to feel you have to talk about anything.
And right, let's wrap it up. Let's get out. It's enough.
If you feel uncomfortable about talking about a topic, we can stop. Or you can say, Gary, actually, I'd rather not talk about that. So that's you have that power to stop.
Okay.
Let's go right back to growing up, mm-hmm. and being a young kid. What was it like?
I think I had a really good childhood. Middle class family. Mum and dad were together for a proportion of that, and I said I grew up in a fantastic village, 3 or 4 miles from where I live now, on the edge of the Cotswolds. I don't look back on my childhood with many negatives. Really, I love my childhood, and that. A lot of that actually came to a lot of my memories from childhood actually are sporting memories. So just very, very happy, really.
So you're a sporty kid?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I just my dad tells a story about, as soon as I could sit up as a baby, he would roll a ball to me, And I'd try and catch it and obviously throw it back. And I remember him taking to me to swimming as a wee lad. And dragging me down to rugby practice. Everything was, and cricket. But everything was, it was very, my dad obviously wanted me to play sport, but just because he was a naturally sporty bloke too. But it was very much part of my soul.
So what were relationships like at home with siblings and mum and dad?
Just give me a sec. Just give me a sec, sorry.
Take all the time.
Now, this is why I was nervous on the train coming in. Life at home. It was a conservative household. As I said, it was a middle class, but conservative household. My memories of home as a kid were that my dad wasn't there very often. Mm-hmm. Whether he was or not, I can't remember. My memory's terrible at best of times, but that's the way that I can remember it. He was in hotels a lot, and he was a national manager, and he would be around the country, so it felt like he wasn't there a lot, which was, it wasn't too much of an issue because I always knew he'd be back at weekends to take me to rugby, so that wasn't too much of an issue. But it was, I wouldn't say it was a conventional relationship as a family we had, and it's gone on to be a bit EastEnders, if I'm honest.
You see, you laugh there, but I suspect that hides a lot of pain.
I'll be honest, it's not been great the last few years, but you move on with it, don't you? So it is what it is. I'm a bit uncomfortable, Gary, if I'm honest.
Let's move on. Tell me that cusp between realizing you were not only pretty good at sport, but you're probably exceptional at sport. How did that manifest itself to you?
Well, when did I realise? I think I've always realised I've been good at sport. Like I said, my old man used to chuck a ball at me since I can remember, and whenever I've picked up a ball or a bat, I've been good at it. Just one of those really annoying people that have got pretty good hand-eye coordination, that I'll just take up a sport and I'll be good at it.
So I think where I want to ask is, has sport for you been a type of therapy?
If I didn't have sport, or if I didn't have that release, I have no idea what sort of bloke I'd be or how bad I'd be.
Give me an idea.
Well, I don't know. I genuinely don't know. Maybe I'm thinking, this is the flip side of it. Well, if I didn't have sport, maybe I would be completely normal. Who knows? It's the parallel universe. No one knows. No one knows that. My dad might have not chucked a ball at me when I was knee high to a grasshopper, and I might have been academic, and I might have been bloody politician or a doctor or therapist, whatever it might be, and I might be someone completely different. So it's a difficult question to ask. I am who I am, and I'm relatively good at sport, but I love sport, whatever it might be. I love to be involved with it.
So I'm wondering what cost there is to you. How hard is it for you to always portray something different to what's going on internally?
Well, it's mentally very tiring, because it's constantly on the whiz, my brain, and very rarely shuts off. I used that word before, a fraud, and that's exactly how I feel. I don't think I've ever called myself that before, but that's how I feel. Everything I've done in my life, I feel like I've been a fraud. Like everything, especially, well, obviously my achievements, if I've actually had any, what those achievements have been, I always think to myself, well, that was a bit of luck, wasn't it? How did I do that? So it's I can't ever give myself a pat on the back, which is really frustrating, because sometimes actually I look, try and take a step away. I would do that all the time, to take a step away and try and look at both sides of the stories. And I think, so, I've actually done all right there. But then I might think to myself, I've done all right, but then it was like, but.
So somebody like a therapist or a coach telling you what a good player you are, how well you've done.
I could not handle that.
Doesn't mean anything, does
no,
it?
No, not at all. Whenever I was a player, I was told throughout my career by coaches at some point or other, mostly it was negative, but when the positive occasions, they come in and say, Belly, well done, you've done this, da, 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 da. And everything behind, I'd be sitting there smiling, go, thanks coach, but in my head thinking to myself, what are they actually thinking, there's got to be something here that I've messed up with, or there's something, they're lying to me.
So Duncan, let's talk about rugby in particular, and not always the sort of success that you would have hoped early on in your career when you're about 16, 17.
No, but I go on to say that my career has been a massive disappointment to myself from the whole way through it, to be honest. But if we're talking about 16 and 17, that's probably where I realised actually I was pretty good at sport, in that I was at 16, I was just in a tutor group at school, and there was an announcement to say that there were rugby trials coming up, and I had been playing, or was playing, junior rugby at Bath at the time. And the school I was at didn't play sport really other than hockey, so it was, to get this announcement in our tutor group that there was a rugby trial was, one, very surprising, and two, I didn't even know what a rugby trial was, so I was like, I fancy giving it that a go. So I asked my tutor what it was, and he said I had to turn up at such and such a date, and I told my dad, and he drove me along, and I got in, and I got into Stroudon Districts under 16s, and then Stroudon Districts played a couple of other districts, and I got into the county, and then the Southwest, and then ultimately, and then went on to play for England Schoolboys at 16, and that's when I realised actually I'm pretty good at this game. And but not only that, I was at the same time, I think 16 seemed to be, when I was a lad anyway, when the trials for all sports seemed to come up, because at the same time I considered myself at 16 to be equally good as cricket, and I loved cricket, and in the summer months I threw myself into cricket, I was passionate about cricket, and then in the winter months it was all about rugby. And that same year I got selected for Gloucestershire County Cricket at 16, had trials for the South West and didn't get in.
What happened to you then? What happened to you emotionally?
Well, I was gutted, because actually at the time I preferred cricket to rugby. I thought I was a better cricketer, but I was, that sense of failure of not getting in the cricket was pretty hard. I played for rugby for England, and I just naturally assumed, that's the wrong word, because I don't assume anything, but I considered myself a better cricketer, so I thought, right, well, I've played rugby for England, and now I'm going to go on and play cricket for England. But I didn't get in. I couldn't understand it. I couldn't understand what I'd done wrong.
So how did you deal with that disappointment?
I don't think I did. I was gutted. I was absolutely gutted. Absolutely gutted. I don't really know how I did it. It's always been a bugbear, as you might be able to tell, for something that happened 26 years ago.
You see, I'd like to pick up the fact that I don't know what I've done wrong. It's almost like a self-blame. Maybe there were just better players who were having that charm.
Never happens, Gary. obviously were. And this is the thing that I said to you at the start of this, when I feel ultimately my career has been let down to myself. And someone said, I saw it on TV recently, where a pundit said that, if you don't get enough caps for England or your club or whatever it might be, it's because you're not good enough. And he's right. I probably wasn't good enough, but I look back and I think to myself, well, I could have been and I should have been, and I didn't do enough to get to that point. And so my my achievements at the elite level with England, and I'm very proud to get 5 caps, but as much as I am proud, even more so I am gutted it wasn't 50 or 100.
Would any number of caps ever have satisfied you?
Probably not.
If you're the record caps holder of
no, I don't think I would ever be satisfied, because there would have been that time when I wasn't selected, or I was injured and didn't play, or I got taken off for 10 minutes to go and didn't play that extra 10 minutes. And
so it's insatiable, isn't it?
It's like a, I suppose like a drug. You know, I can't stop failing. That's probably the issue, is I can't stop that fear of failure and actual failure, how I perceive failure, constantly happening.
But also the success in your life, it strikes me, can't be banked. There's no way of that you holding on to the success that you have had in your career, and somehow the failures are measured in a completely different unit.
You're right. The negatives, they accrue interest, and the positives
don't have any.
Go the way of Brexit.
Welcome back to On the Sporting Couch, an on-air therapy session with a sports person who's been very open about their mental health issues and how it's affected their careers. My guest is former Bath and Sale Sharks tight end prop Duncan Bell. I'm therapist Gary Bloom.
One of the things that struck me very deeply about talking to you the other day was that what you said was, for the 80 minutes of a rugby union game, you're completely involved with what's going on in the match. Any sense of depression, anxiety just gets cut out. Is that right?
Yep, absolutely. I don't remember any moment during a rugby game when I was on the field that I ever had any sort of problems at all. Nothing. I don't remember that at all. Before the game, wow, yeah. At half time, they started to creep back in. But then as soon as the game started again for the second half, no, absolutely fine.
So what was going on for you before kickoff, during the half time when maybe you were being criticised by the coach or the manager, and after the game?
This goes back to a conversation I remember having with whoever it was, with the England under 16 schoolboys. It was England under 18s. So I was 18, 17 at the time. And so we're all 17-year-old kids. There's a question I handed around to the players, and it was all to do with, you know, how we perceive ourselves as people, as players, and basically about positivity. And it was, I don't remember any of the questions at all, but I remember it was 1 to 5. And as it turned out, 1 was a very negative emotion and 5 was a very positive emotion. And so I'm answering all these questions, and I'm not even never had done one of these tests before, so I knew nothing about it. And I was like, oh, these are interesting questions, and I was just filling them out. And just filling out, and at the end of it, they said, the England team, the full England team, has just done the same test, and Jason Leonard, who had millions of caps for England and the Lions, who was a current prop at the time, they said he is, every single one of those questions for him is 5. He's positive about this, all the way down. I looked at my results, and I was like, oh my God, mine were all 1s and 2s, and I just, at that point, thinking to myself, wow, well, I'm not Jason Leonard, I'm someone completely and utterly different. And and that moves on to the way I build myself up emotionally for a game, how I psych myself up for a game, which was, the way I would psych myself up for a game would be to be flooded full of negative emotion. So I would which I understand is the wrong way to do it. I've been told that many times, but I can't help it. That's so, just the way I did it.
So what sort of emotions were you telling yourself before you started again when you're getting changed?
Well, I would... before every single game, this is, I can't believe I'm going to say this, everywhere you go, there's always obviously change rooms, obviously urinals, and normally there's little stalls. There's normally most clubs have three little urinals, so I don't know how this ever happened, but I would always I would always pee in the right-hand urinal, and I would say to myself, tight heads are going to have an awesome game today, and loose heads are going to get stuffed. Because I was playing tight head. So I was like, I have to pee in this right-hand urinal because that urinal is on the right-hand side of the scrum, and he's going to dominate. And that was the only positive thing I think I ever did before a game. Other than that, I used to think to myself... I tried so hard to visualise myself having a good game, to visualise myself running the ball and handing people off and scoring tries and making big tackles. But if that went through my head, as soon as that went through my head, the next emotion or the next visualisation was me of getting annihilated in a scrum, missing a tackle, losing the game, dropping a ball over the line, breaking my leg, breaking my neck, letting people down, and that's the way I went into a game, every single game, with complete fear because of it. But that's how I did it, and I don't remember doing it any differently ever since I was a 16-year-old kid with the England at schoolboys. Just the way I did it, but I can't stop it. It's just like this insatiable urge to think negatively. And I don't want to. I don't want to be that bloke. I don't want to do it. It's a pain in the ass, I'll be honest. And it's tiring, and it's... And I'd love to be able to beat Jason Leonard when he was playing for England and ticking all those five boxes and being uber confident, being a James Haskells of this world and being outwardly positive all the time and having no negative emotion. But that isn't me, and I can't seem to stop doing it.
Did you ever consider that Jason Leonard was just ticking the boxes that that people expected him to tick? And
well, I did learn from that experience, Gary. So let's just say boxes 1 and 2 were never ticked again.
But isn't that, you know, that what we talked about earlier on in our conversation about hiding the truth from hiding the truth inside yourself, and it becomes a mirror image?
Yeah.
Isn't that literally what's going on with the box ticking?
I suppose so. I did, because I was such a naive lad back then. Some would still say I am naive. But I just... I was answering those questions honestly. And I still can't help motivating myself by demotivating myself.
When did you realise that there was a problem?
I was in a particularly bad place mentally, but I was also going through a divorce at the time, which obviously exacerbated all the problems that I have. And we were on a pre-season trip. When I was at Bath, we were on a pre-season trip to Portugal. It was a pre-season camp. And we were away for, I think, a week. And it was all hard work and what have you. But I was playing table tennis. So I was playing table tennis with David Flatman. And we finished the game and he wandered off. And I wandered past the doctor. And the doc just pulled me to one side. I said, "Belly, can I just have a word?" I said, "Yeah, Jules, what do you want?" And he goes, "Just sit down." And he's, "How are you feeling?" And I was like, "All right, mate. What's up?" He goes, "Belly, how you feeling, mate?" And gone. Broke down. Don't know what happened. It flicked a switch. He just pressed a switch and it all... I broke. I completely broke. And I just thought it was the end of the world, the end of me, and I couldn't stop myself. I couldn't stop it. Horrendous, absolutely horrendous. Thinking back to it,
you seem affected by it even now.
Yeah, I remember. I remember it vividly, unfortunately. And it was. It didn't last very long. I say very long. It was just had a 5-minute conversation with the doc, and luckily, it was far enough away from anyone that they could actually see.
Are you glad you broke down?
No.
You wish you wanted to hold it in longer.
No, I just wish I was someone else.
You wish you were someone else or someone
else?
Well,
yeah, someone else. I don't wish it had ever happened. No, I don't. I'm not proud of it in any way. I wish I don't remember it. I wish it hadn't happened. I wish I wasn't like I am.
Is that shame?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, yeah.
Because shame is usually the strongest human emotion going.
And it's just embarrassing. It was embarrassing. I've always been an emotional guy. I can always remember. I can remember watching E.T. I was probably 8. less than that, probably. I was younger than that, and bawling my eyes out at the end of it. And it's been the same ever since. Watch a chick flick, and I can't help it. I'm at the end of it. I'm terrible. I listen to a piece of music, and it sets me off. So I've always been emotional. I don't like doing it. I hate it with a passion, and I wish it was. I wish it didn't happen, but it did. And that's probably when I thought to myself, right, well, there you go. There is something up. Let's crack on. Let's see what we can do to resolve it.
And you got great. Encouragement and confidence by another great rugby union player, John Kirwan,
mm-hmm.
who has also been very open about his mental health issues.
He has, yeah. Runs his own charity. He was at the top of his sport when he was playing, probably the world's best rugby player, and had a huge breakdown. And I came out when I spoke openly when I retired from my career. Initially in 2012 and did the article with the Telegraph just before that. That's on the lead up to that article being written. I played in a Help for Heroes game, and it was a little bit like a bars game at Twickenham, and something I was really proud to be involved with, and JK was the coach, and I thought to myself, right, I'm gonna make a beeline for this bloke and talk to him openly about it, because he talks openly about mental health issues. And I thought, well, I'll never get a better opportunity. And I completely bottled it when I turned up. I didn't say anything to him. I just introduced myself. Said he went, "Hi, I'm JK. I'm Belly. Let's go and play some rugby." And I didn't talk to him. And it was on the tip of my tongue the whole time I was there. And it was, bring it back to that. It was shameful. I didn't want to talk about it, so I didn't. And then I go on and do the article. Ridiculously, having not spoken to JK, so I'd get it out there in the world for everyone to see and read. And then at the end of that season, again, I get selected for the Barbars to play against England, Ireland, and Wales, I think it was. And I was part of the squad, and JK was coach. And I remember walking into the hotel in Cardiff, and I walk into the foyer, I got my bag, and JK is there. And he takes one look at me, and I look at him, and I could see he's registered, and he goes, and he has his arms out, and he goes, "Belly, why the fuck didn't you tell me?" I'm like, "Yeah, I have no idea, mate. I have absolutely no idea."
Shame?
Yeah, completely. Well, I do know, shameful. And he gave me a massive hug, and we had a great chat for ages afterwards, and he just spoke to me about it, and a guy that isn't ashamed of it. Isn't ashamed of it, and I wish I was like that, but I'm not. And he's just a bit of an inspiration, really, the way he's coped with it and got on with it, and I sort of haven't.
In the midst of all this, you have a divorce, which affects you deeply as well.
Yeah.
How does that add into the picture?
Well, it certainly didn't help. That was probably when I went rapidly downhill, if I'm honest. Obviously, life events don't help with depression and anxiety and stress. And I remember in 2001, years and years ago, when no one ever did any shows like this, no one spoke about it. It was completely taboo. And in 2001, I remember feeling like this wasn't something right, and make an appointment with a GP and sitting outside the surgery waiting for my appointment. The first time in my life I was early for an appointment, and I'm waiting and getting to the time and looking at my watch going, it's time to go in. And I think to myself, what am I going to talk to this GP about? And then I was, you know, sitting there going, well, what can I possibly say? How can I describe? Because I didn't know I had potentially had depression at the time or anxiety. I didn't know what it was. I just wasn't feeling right. And I was like, right, I'm going to go in there and just go, hi, doc. Something's wrong, but I don't know what. So I sat there, and the clock ticked by, and the clock ticked by, and I literally went, mate, man up, will you? This is pathetic. And I just started the engine and buggered off. Went, that's enough. What the hell am I doing? But it wasn't until that moment with the doc, when he prescribed me citalopram, and he gave me, and he told me to go and get, go and see a therapist. It wasn't, you know, that's when it, I definitely went, well, that's it, that's what I've got. Oh, right, okay, a bit of a moment. Oh, right, that's what it is. Which was a great relief, as well as a shameful and weak and pathetic and all the negative adjectives you can think of. But at the same time, a relief, and that I could do something about it. But at the same time, it was, how can I... how can I look anyone in the eye again? Knowing that's who I am. I was pretty low at that point, and the divorce certainly didn't help it. But I was probably of my own making. So there it is.
Selling a little or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to TalkSport, and this is On the Sporting Couch with me, Gary Bloom. Joining me in the studio today is former England Rugby Union prop, Duncan Bell, whose club and international career have been deeply affected by anxiety and depression.
I don't know why. I have always spoken more openly, more honestly with women than I have ever with men. Maybe that's because I've always been surrounded by 40 massive, aggressive rugby players throughout my life, and that's not something you tend to open up about.
Did they give you hugs?
Yeah, but they were man hugs. They were different. They were hugs after scoring a try, after, you know, high five from doing something good.
Did your dad hug you?
Blimey, that's a question. probably. Mate, got me.
Take your time.
I don't know. I can't remember. I can't remember. Yes. Must have done, but I don't remember.
I know this is a tough question, Duncan, and I don't ask it lightly. Are you able to hug your kids?
Oh, yeah.
What does it mean to you when you do?
Everything. That's a really interesting question, because everything I do with my kids... I've never really thought about it like this. Yeah, I hug them. I hug them a lot, and I tell them I love them. But I'm going to tell my kids that all the time. So whenever I do see them, I always tell them, and it's not overkill. I just think it's important as a parent to be able to tell your kids that. And it was a different era back then, to be fair. So it was, and like I said, it was a conservative household, and emotions were not spoken of. So you know, I was petrified to bring girlfriends home. I remember that. Not that I had many as a lad. I certainly couldn't bring girlfriends home. But I don't want my kids to be like that. I want them to bring girlfriends and boyfriends back. And
why didn't you want your parents to see a girlfriend? Or a girlfriend of yours? Shame.
Yeah, I think it was, yeah. Yeah, very much so.
Would they be critical of her? Do you think they would?
I don't know. It never happened. I never brought them back. Mm-hmm. First girlfriend I ever brought back was my first wife. Ever. When I was 19, I was the first one ever. Mm. And now my mum doesn't talk to my wife, so so I've it's all like I said, it's all to cock.
That feels very painful when you say that.
Well, that's bullshit, if I'm honest, Gary. Sorry.
It's okay. Do you want your mum to love your wife?
Well, my mum has never seen my my son, so, and he's nearly two. So yeah, it's all very. I would never ever be like that. Never ever in a million years would my kids be like that, regardless of what they did or haven't done or did do. I would never ostracise my children, knowingly. And people might listen to this interview and then say, "But yeah, but you don't live with your kids." Well, okay, I don't. But it doesn't mean I don't love them. It doesn't mean I'd ever further turn my back on them, I suppose. Not that I wanted to turn my back. Part of the divorce, unfortunately. But there we go.
What strikes me is how much pain you carry.
Yeah, it's not great, mate. It's not great in my head, Gary. There are better places in this world, let me tell you.
Talk to me about counselling and something about medication, because when I was being trained, what my trainer always said to me that that counselling works best with short-term medication. Is that true?
Well, in my experience, absolutely, 100%, yeah. You know, when I had my little moment with the doctor in Portugal, he prescribed me antidepressants and said go and see a therapist, and which was what I did. And although I was probably on medication for maybe a year, maybe 9 months or so, but that was in conjunction with the therapy. And I got to a point where I thought to myself, well, I want to, because I felt it was a failure for taking the medication. I wanted to get off as soon as possible. It was a goal of mine to get off them as soon as possible, because I felt numb on them. And I know that's what they're meant to do. They're meant to take away that the end of the spectrums, or the bad end of the spectrum of emotions. But for me, it took away both ends. So not only did I not... I was numb. I was somewhere in the middle. I wasn't sad, and I wasn't depressed, and I wasn't unhappy, but I wasn't happy, and I wasn't loving, and I wasn't at that end of the spectrum either. There was both of them being taken away completely, being severed. And I sat in the middle, and I hated it, wandering around in a haze. Couldn't stand it. I almost wanted to be at the wrong end of the scale so I could feel the top end of the scale. I felt like it was more of a circle rather than a line, if you know what I mean. And so I was on them for about 9 months with the therapy, and I felt I was doing really well. And I came off them for about another year. And then I started to... I could feel myself... Well, no, I couldn't, actually. It was my wife, bless her. She kept her eye on me and keeps her eye on me, and said to me that she thought I was struggling again. And I said, no, I'm not. And there you are. So I went back to the doc at that point. She'll always tell you she's right, and she is. And I went back to the doc, and he prescribed 6 more months. So I went back on for 6 more months. Again, I thought it was blimmin' failure, but it set me on a straight and narrow. And then after that, I haven't used them since, and I haven't been back to a therapist since. And that must be 3 years, 4 years or so. So
you're doing well.
You wouldn't believe it, would you?
I think you're doing remarkable.
All the negative comments I've come out with today, you wouldn't believe it.
But your negative comments, they're all about yourself.
Yeah, okay.
I think there's a split here, and the split here for me as a therapist is rugby is about being tough and having resilience, physical resilience, mental resilience, going into big games, taking big hits. That is one side of the sport. The other side is something that you have found very difficult to deal with, the anxiety, the depression. The two just don't seem to, in my opinion, sit very easily side by side.
They don't. And you're right. And it is, you know, it's been said to me very many, many times about, you know, that's not the right environment, and that you can't open up, and you shouldn't open up to those sorts of characters. But it's the irony is, when I did, it was a great experience. It was really emotional, and you know, I did the article in the Telegraph, and it came out, and I said, and I left it so long. I'd done the article, I knew when it was coming out, and I said to myself, well, I have to tell the coaches, I have to tell the players, otherwise they're going to read it and go, Belly, what's going on, mate? And I had to tell him, and I knew when it was coming out, and every day that went by it just went on and on. And I said, I'll tell him today. No, I don't. No, I won't. I'll tell him today. No, I won't. No, I won't. I'll tell him today. And in the end it was too late. And the day it came out in the morning, that's the day I told the coaches. And luckily we had weights at 7:30 in the morning, so no, and this is 4 or 5 years ago, and there was not a great deal online at that point, so it wasn't out there in the public domain yet, but I knew it was going to be. And I was backed into a corner. I backed myself into a corner. I had to tell him. So I went to tell Sirian McGeachan and Nick Blofeld, the chief exec of Bath at the time, Martin Haag, the coach. And I said, lads, I've got to have a word. And I just said, look, and I explained what had happened to me. They didn't know, because I expressly told the doctor of the club not to tell the coaches, because I thought it was a weakness, and that I didn't want it used against me for team selection, which I thought it would do, which I know when I actually take a step back, I know it won't be, but in my head at the time it would have been. And I said, look, this is the way I feel, this is what I've done, I've done the article, I've done it to try and help other people as well as myself, and it's what it is. And I expected to get a huge box, to get bringing the game into disrepute and to have some sort of disciplinary. That's what I thought was going to happen. And Geach just went, Belly, well done, mate. That's what he said. He just said, well done. I was like, oh, I didn't expect that reaction.
There will be people, sportsmen listening to this show, who are struggling themselves. And hopefully we're going to widen our understanding of mental health issues in sport. What's your real message to people who are listening to this, struggling and saying, I know exactly what this feels like?
Well, firstly, I feel sorry for them because I know how tough it can be. And there are many, many people in a worse situation than I've ever been in. So I know how hard it can be. But the best thing I ever did was talk to my doc about it. Now, I was in an enviable position of I was 24/7 with the doc. Every single day, the doc was with me. And he saw me mentally go downhill, and he was the one that prompted me. But there are millions of people in Civvy Street, for want of a better word, that don't have that privilege, that aren't being closely monitored by a GP. But if you feel like you are slipping into that, don't have any shame or any reservation of going to seeing a GP, because it's more prevalent in society than I think anyone actually realises. And I would imagine if someone does a survey and says, have you ever suffered from this? I bet there'd be loads of people that lie and say, nope. So it'd be a false reflection, actually, of how big a proportion of the population will have suffered from mental health at some point in their lives. So I think the first point of call is to go and see a GP if you are unable to open up to your family. I certainly wasn't, because of the way my family is structured. Couldn't do that. But if you can open up to close ones, do that. To your spouse, to your brother, your sister, do that. See a GP, go and get therapy. The combination of therapy and medication was exactly the thing I needed to bring me from the brink of mentally collapsing forever. And that combination brought me up to a degree where I can then self-medicate myself. In other words, I got myself into a mental state where I could work out and monitor myself mentally and know exactly what I can and can't do and what I should be doing in the future. But you need to get yourself into that position, and you can only do that, I think, by going to your GP and talking to about the options open to you as a person. For a sportsman, you are in the enviable position of having medically trained people on hand a lot of the time. So, and again, from my experience, they are completely confidential conversations you can have with your club doc. Go and do it. I expressly forbid my club doc from telling my coaches, because I didn't want to get dropped on a Saturday. In my head, I was going to get dropped for being a little bit sad. That's how I felt. But there's no difference between in my head. It was the same excuse, right? Betty can't play Saturday because he's got pulled hamstring. Betty can't play Saturday because he's mentally unwell. That's the way I saw it. Now, there will be other players thinking exactly the same thing, but they shouldn't think like that, because if you tell the doc and tell them to button it, don't tell the coaches, they will do that, and they'll help you to get the right course of treatment that you need, and that's the way it should be. So, and God, I wish I'd done it earlier. I really do, because it was maybe I would have been a better rugby player because of it. Who knows?
Well, joining me now is Dr. Phil Hopley, expert in the field of sports psychiatry. Phil, what's your reaction to Duncan's story?
First of all, amazingly brave, you know, and fantastic for the work that people like myself do to be able to encourage others to seek help. But then the two things that jumped out at me were just the power of negative emotions like shame and self-blame and being unable to sort of value oneself. That's been writ large throughout Duncan's life, and it's still there. It's still a major factor for him. And then the thing that held him back, you know, that worry about what other people will think, the stigma, and how that links into, for elite sportsmen and women, confidentiality and fears about not wanting to seek help. So right at the end, Duncan said, if only he'd sought help earlier, you know, what a difference it could have made. He could have been a better player. I've got no doubt that that would have been the case.
Does Duncan's story resonate with many sportsmen that you've come across?
Yeah, I mean, I've been running the sports practice at Cognacity now for getting on for 10 years, and we cover 15 sports in the UK. And actually, it doesn't matter whether you're talking about a sort of 16, 17 stone, huge hulking rugby player or a very small gymnast that goes around. The themes are very, very similar because of the pressure that people are under to perform, and then the additional pressure that they put themselves under because of their thinking and their behaviours. We see people with anxiety, with depression, with relationship problems, with turning to drink and alcohol as ways of coping, just as we see with the general population. The pictures and the presentations are exactly the same.
And finally, advice to sportsmen or sportswomen listening to this?
Yeah, look, it's good to talk, and there is still that worry about where does that information get shared to, and that's one of the reasons why the player associations have set up confidential helplines such as the ones that we run. But the important thing is whoever you're comfortable talking to, talk to them. If it's a parent, if it's a sibling, if it's another half, it's a professional, don't keep these things internalised. Speak to somebody, because it is really good to talk.
You've been listening to On the Sporting Couch, a programme that attempted to shine a light on mental health issues in sport. I'm Gary Bloom, a psychotherapist, counsellor and sports broadcaster, and my guest in the studio has been ex-rugby union international Duncan Bell, whose career was deeply affected by mental health issues. Duncan's sporting career was blighted by his anxiety and depression, and the elite athletes I've worked with say the playing of the sport was often the easiest bit. The hardest part was after the final whistle went or the race was over. That's when they needed help. I hope this programme will have encouraged anyone who has or knows anyone who has had mental health issues to come forward to get help. And there are some helpful links on the TalkSport website if you Google this programme, On the Sporting Couch. We hope to be back soon with more people who'd be prepared to sit on the sporting couch. I'm Gary Bloom, and please remember, there's no such thing as good health without good mental health. Goodbye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.